Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series today. Today, talking about two players, one offensive and one defense, as always. Nelson Aguilar, the wide receiver on offense, and Trenton Simpson, the inside linebacker, weak side linebacker, we think, on the defense. Here to do it with me is Brad McGowan. Brad, how you doing?
Ken, I'm doing great. This is one of my favorite series that you do every year. I mean, I guess you only have been doing it. This is the second time around, but I really enjoyed this series last year. I participated in a couple and I love listening to this, so I'm excited for this.
All right. It feels like this might be 3 years, but maybe it is only two. I really don't know, but it is one of my favorites too. And the reason why we do it, if you're wondering, we want to cross-sectionalize people's ability to comment on position groups. And so one offensive and one defensive player, you don't necessarily get to talk about every position group, although there's a lot of wandering that goes on in these shows, as I'm sure the listeners are aware. But there is also an ability for multiple people who each take an inside linebacker to talk about the inside linebacker group, or maybe even how that impacts who who might be used a dime in terms of a third down. So we have an option on to do that. And we'll still have those other shows that talk about the position groups at the appropriate time, probably at the end of camp, talking about the position groups and how they stand. But right now, this is the way I like to do the expectations. And this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you being part of it last year, Brad, and really appreciate you being back on air again. Also, you appreciate your contributions to draft content with your time on the show there.
That was fun. That was fun. Good time had by all.
Love that watch party. That's it's another event worth taking part in if you have a chance. All right, so we're talking about Nelson Agholor and Trenton Simpson. So let's start with Agholor. I think a lot of people do want to hear about Simpson. We're going to save the best for last in a way. But Agholor, a guy who I was very down, frankly, on the acquisition of him last year, but I think he outplayed the cost of him, which was not insignificant, $3.25 million in salary. That's actually not that bad, but a sixth-round selection that they gave up in terms of a compensatory pick that would have hit this year they gave up because they signed Nelson Agholor and it offset that pick.
Yeah, I think the I had a similar reaction when the Ravens signed him, and it was really less about Agholor as a player and as someone that could be a depth piece and more about the time in which the signing took place. It was really at the beginning of free agency last season, when we knew they needed to make an investment in the receiver core, and we knew that Lamar remained unsigned. And so Agholor was the first domino that fell, which at the time we didn't know they might sign OBJ, albeit to an expensive contract. He was a big name and someone that Lamar wanted. And then ultimately they signed Lamar and drafted Zay, and the wide receiver room and the pass catchers in general played pretty well last year. But at the time they signed Agholor, I was a little bit concerned that this is not going to be it. This is not the route we need to go.
Yeah. It, generally speaking, signing an older receiver is not the route you need to go always for me. So I think people know how I feel about this a lot. He's entering his 10th season this year, turned 31 just last month in May. We're recording this on June 2nd right now, but certainly from any perspective, completely justified the contract, I think. He's now signed to a vet minimum contract in his second year and has some rollover void dollars still due him, about $925,000, but I do not believe that is new money. So the only additional money they paid Agholor is $1.21 million. Definitely would consider the second year a bargain after what we saw in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that I certainly agree with that. It's interesting thinking about where they are right now in the pass catcher, you know, with their group of pass catchers. Zay came in last year and had an exceptional first year, exceeded my expectations. And I was listening to a breakdown on the Reception Perception podcast about Zay, and they were singing his praises and talking about the things he does well. He does exceptionally well. So it'll be interesting to see him take a step this year. They as a group, they are placing a lot of eggs in the Bateman basket, and so I think, you know, taking this back to Agholor, he's in line to be the third receiver, where last year he was the fourth receiver. I think we're excited about the Walker pick, but he's a fourth rounder and he's pretty raw. So to expect him to come in and contribute in a significant fashion is probably a little bit of high hopes there. And so Agholor probably needs to pick up a little bit of production from where he was last year. I agree, it's great price to pay for that guy, but he, you know, right now he's looking like he's going to be a third receiver.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit, because I don't think that he has to do much more in terms of targets or receptions than he did last year, but he had a really fine year. Going back to 22 and 21 at New England, he'd had two consecutive very poor years. The 22 season in particular, he was among the dregs of the league in terms of contested catches and drops and some other things. Yards per route run, they were not good. And of course he's playing with Mac Jones, so he's playing with one hand tied behind his back. Comes to Baltimore, first of all, catches 35 out of 45 balls, which is when you catch 78% of the balls, your yards per target is naturally going to benefit from that significantly. And then also, you know, he bumped his yards per target from 7.5 in 22 to 8.5 in 23, which is that is very unusual for a 30-year-old receiver. And I'll even add the tagline coming to the Baltimore Ravens, because typically Baltimore Ravens wide receivers are much more possession oriented and have lower yards per target. If you look at, you know, who are the best ever for multiple franchises, the Ravens best ever don't really compare to other best evers for other teams.
We did a podcast a couple of weeks ago, recollection series talking about Anquan Boldin. I think we both settled on that he is probably the best Ravens wide receiver, and he never hit 1,000 yards. So, mm-hmm. You know, that point really rings true. And I think, you know, I think I agree, like, we're going to get a little bit later in this section to what constitutes a good and great season. And I think he had a really good season last year, far exceeded my expectations. It was really efficient. You know, he did a number of things really well that were very helpful for the offense. In particular, he seemed to really understand how to get open late when Lamar was scrambling and played the scramble drill really well. And that is something that Lamar does a lot. And having guys that can get open, that can find areas and zones to settle down or run into an open space, that is incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I agree. And the 9.8 second touchdown, I mean, Aguilar is not a guy who gave up on routes last year, and it really paid off for him in terms of trust, in terms of playing time, in terms of a couple of big TDs. I mean, it was definitely a very big positive for Aguilar this last year. I think the other thing, which to me now is almost like an iconic play, but it'll always be one of the plays we remember Aguilar for, is dragging the safety off of Zay Flowers for that. I forget if it was the go-ahead or the game tying. I think it might actually be the go-ahead.
Was,
the Rams
it was
tied
the go-ahead. Go-ahead Rams touchdown.
The go-ahead touchdown against the Rams, and then they won that game. Of course, in overtime on the Chris Wallace return. Chris Moore. Wallace. Yeah. In any case, that play was not only was it unselfish in terms of what he was able to do running right at the receiver, because he's taking himself out of the play on that. He also called it in the huddle, is the way that's reported. And I'm not sure if I 100% believe it in the way it's been doctored up after the fact, but I do believe that Aguilar suggested, hey, I can draw that safety off. He didn't necessarily call it on this play. We're going to do it, and I'll run right at the safety. They're going to look at that too high shell, and, you know, all of that stuff. I don't know if I believe that, but I do believe that Aguilar told Lamar he could run that safety off, and maybe Lamar even communicated to Monken, and they came up with a way to beat it. But outstanding play, and to see Aguilar from the top view, that sideline view, you know, going crazy after the play, saying, "Yeah, that's great." You knew it was kind of his plan.
Yeah, and just for the listeners that don't know the exact play that we were talking about, in the LA Rams game at home last year, Baltimore coming off a bye, it was in the rain, the Rams were giving him trouble. On the go-ahead touchdown to Flowers, Aguilar runs, he's on the left side, I think he might have been in the slot, and he runs up and then cuts his route hard off to the sideline to draw the safety down. And then Flowers is coming across from the back end, and Lamar is able to fit it into Flowers for the go-ahead touchdown.
Right. I think they might have actually both started on the right side, but either way, he drew that left safety off and actually drew him all the way towards the sideline where he took him. Aguilar ends up on the play outside. You still catch him on that top view, but it's really a thing of beauty. If you have a chance to look at the All-22 and go back to that game, it's really interesting to see that post-touchdown reaction by Aguilar, because it tells you a lot about the veracity of the claims in the huddle and you know what might have been talked about. But it's also just a thoroughly unselfish play. It's like run blocking. It's something a lot of receivers don't have any interest in doing. You know, and certainly, you know, I'm not going to get paid for that. Why should I do that kind of thing? It is a play that Aguilar will be remembered for years from now for having pulled off here in Baltimore. Had a pretty good year.
I was just going to say that there was a Wired episode that caught him talking to Lamar that he would be able to draw that safety. And I think, Ken, to your point, we don't know if it was edited just so it looked like it was in the huddle immediately preceding the play or whether it happened previously in the game, but it was pretty cool. And I did want to point out that what I was thinking about early in the season in the Cincinnati game in Cincinnati, Aguilar has a touchdown on a beautiful flag route or corner route that Lamar fits in nicely. And on the underneath, Flowers is running, you know, some sort of jittery route underneath. And you can, I think Flowers mentioned this in the post game that the corner, as Flowers is making his move, the corner is like, oh, I locked you down. And Flowers turns around and points because the ball was always going to Aguilar over the head. And the corner had no idea what was going on. And so maybe Nelson owed Flowers one from earlier in the season, but that was pretty cool.
I like it going both ways, but if Aguilar had done it, I'd have been even that much happier with it. Run blocking, was something we just mentioned, is something Aguilar did reasonably well. He'd been in years of decline, had some really bad years at New England as a run blocker, but came to Baltimore, was okay. He did have a holding flag. I believe it was a holding flag in week 3 against Indianapolis. But anyway, that was his one kind of mistake during the season. Otherwise, did a pretty good job of keeping his feet, decent positional run blocker. He's not at the top. He's not Miles Boykin, but he's a hell of a effective guy in terms of holding off usually a cornerback while he's run blocking.
Yeah, and he reminds me a little bit in this iteration of the Baltimore offense. He reminds me a little bit of the role. He kind of fits in to the role Willie Snead played early in Lamar's career. That veteran presence that was, you know, good working underneath, was a security blanket. You could catch on them in critical third or count on them in third downs. And, you know, he's kind of fits that similar role.
Yeah, that's a good comp. And it's not like Snead was really a deep threat ever, but Aguilar was. And, you know, 3 years ago, Aguilar was one hell, or in 2020, one hell of a deep threat for Las Vegas. Correct. And they were getting him over the top of the defense a lot. He is now a possession receiver. He's more, I think, Kelly Washington, some of the other great third down receivers the Ravens have had over the years. But he's going to be a guy who moves the sticks for the Ravens, who's big on extended plays, which is a big part of playing well on third down for this team. But, his role has changed, and he's a possession guy as opposed to a deep threat.
Correct. He does have still a little bit of burst, though. I was watching some of his highlights, and on the Thursday night Cincinnati game, the one that Andrews gets hurt, he catches a pass over the middle and turns the jets to weave through the defense for a touchdown and, you know, does a Antonio Brown front flip into the end zone. So he's still got juice in those legs.
All right. For 2024, backup X, fourth or fifth wide receiver. And the Ravens do have some glass at the X receiver position. Bateman's been hurt a fair amount. Another backup to that would be Tez Walker. And Tez Walker is a guy who, first of all, doesn't run the whole route tree, and he doesn't have to. Even as the X receiver, he doesn't really have to. It would be nice if he could get his hitch routes working to complement whatever deep routes he runs, because deep routes are really what he does well. He needs something that is complementary to that in terms of a comeback route that Lamar can find him on and be very effective to keep that that DB honest. But they don't have a whole lot of depth at X receiver that they can count on to stay healthy. And Aguilar might be a guy who they really rely on for some snaps there.
Yeah, going back to when we were talking earlier, and it sounded like I made the comment that they're looking at him to be a third receiver as opposed to a fourth this year. You know, I think 2 years ago, they were heavily relying on Bateman to be the primary X receiver. He started the season well, got hurt, and their passing game fell apart. That was Romans last year. Mm-hmm. Then last year in Munkin's first year, it seemed like their strategy at the receiver room was let's just get a lot of bodies, guys that have different skill sets, and we'll get a passing game going out of that. And so, you know, they had Bateman coming off injury. We had OBJ. We had signed Aguilar. They drafted Zay. They still had Duvernay. And so they address the passing game by just having a lot of variety. This year, we're a little bit back to, hey, Zay is going to be our number one. We're trusting him to take a step. We really believe in Bateman. We've signed him. And so now we have Aguilar and we have Tez Walker. But we don't have the depth or the number of bodies that you can really rely on this last year. And so, you know, to your point, he might have to play some a lot more X snaps than he did previously. Yeah.
I mean, I would say he's primarily a slot guy, but the Ravens really like their tight ends in the slot. And I imagine they'll play a lot of 12. You know, he really can play anywhere at this point in his career. He can play some Z as needed. He can line up as you need him. He almost has lined up some as a tight end in last year, very, very tight formations, throwing a chip block in some cases. And we look at chip and set blocks on pass plays. And you know, it's surprising that you occasionally get an R15 on there that indicates he's blocking the right side. But anyway, a guy who he can do a lot of things for your football team, which is, I think, one of the reasons I like him. I don't really like the term fourth receiver, fifth receiver, sixth receiver, and I do use it because I understand people do it, but I really hate the guy. He's not a number one receiver. He'll always be a number two receiver. I just can't stand that from people on Twitter. Define what you mean. Who are all – give me the entire list. Take as long as you need, but give me the entire fucking list of number one receivers in the National Football League, and I bet they come up with about 12 guys, which first of all is going to tell you not every team gets one. Okay? Right. Not every team gets a number one receiver. And if they've got two, if Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are both number one receivers, well, guess what? 21 teams don't have one now. So anyway.
Yeah, and I think, you know, really the thing that we should be thinking about more, well, I don't know. The point I'm going to make here is that when I think of a number one receiver, like in my mind conceptually, what I'm thinking of is a true X receiver that will line up on the line in press coverage and will run, you know, true X receiver routes, like stick routes, comeback routes, like hard out routes, like the guy that's going to be the ball winner in press coverage. And the Ravens really haven't had a pure X receiver. I mean, shoot, I don't even know when they've had a guy like that. I mean, when you're thinking of that, you're thinking of
Michael Jackson,
Julio Jones. You know, they haven't ever had a guy like that.
Well, Michael Jackson in the 90s would probably have qualified as that.
Sure.
But you're right. Anquan Boldin. It's not a great list of wide receivers that have played for the Ravens. It's certainly the case, but you know, the X receiver has a large responsibility because he gets such a large portion of the space budget for the offense. He's got to really be able to do something with it. And that means run multiple routes. So to the degree they do put Devontae Walker out there, I'm not saying he has to be Bateman in terms of running all the routes, but he has to be effective running deep routes. And he has to be effective coming back for the football. And I think I actually might trust a player like Aguilar to do that more wherever he lines up, especially given the chemistry he's built with Lamar in terms of being an extended throw guy, really understanding not giving up on routes and continuing to try and find space. So, let's move on and talk about what would make a good season for Aguilar this year from your perspective.
For this year, I think just honestly a similar level of production as last year. Continue being a target on extended plays, high level efficiency. You know, I don't know that we're going to see 78% year over year catch rate, but a high level catch rate, you know, a handful of touchdowns, moderate passing or moderate level of yards, sub 400 is fine. Assuming the passing game retains a similar level of effectiveness as it had last year, I think that would be a good year for Aguilar.
Okay. All right. And that's, I kind of like the soft descriptions of this better. I did put in a little bit hard here because I wanted to relate it to his previous season, but my good season is continues to be an extended play threat for Lamar and a valuable possession receiver who forces his way onto the field for a similar number of total targets as 23. I think that's reasonable given the departure of OBJ. So you have Walker coming in, you have OBJ leaving. You've already gotten good performance out of Aguilar. You probably want to get more with him. He's been a very durable player, which has been one of the really nice things over his whole career. So, you know, he's got a better chance to probably be on the field than rookies. The Ravens have had unbelievable luck, and I'm using air quotes, obviously, with regard to rookies having a lot of poor luck with soft tissue injuries. And I think that's always an ongoing problem. And as much as there's a rookie wall at a lot of positions, soft tissue injuries at the real speed positions, both cornerback and wide receiver, are two places where you see it show up all the time. Rookies missing a lot of preseason games. So I think, I wouldn't have a really high expectation of how many total snaps Tez Walker is going to get this year based on that. And I'm high on him. He's my number 12 wide receiver in the whole draft. I'm happy the Ravens got him. I want them to use him, but on that said, I don't see him getting on the field as much. So what I would say in terms of per snap productivity is that I'll take a small dip in yards per target, a small step backwards. It definitely does not have to maintain 8.5. But if you were to drop into the 8.0 range, and he can get there any number of ways, maybe a few more big plays with a substantially lower catch rate, or the same catch rate and a little bit lower yards after the catch, say, than he did this year. I think it was around 4.5 yards this year, so that's pretty good. Yeah. So anyway, I'm that would be a good season for me. And actually, it'd be fine to have a step back from last year. And I would be kind of a hypocrite if I didn't say that. For one reason is that, first of all, I think last year was a great year, so I wouldn't expect that the same out of him. And I certainly wouldn't expect the same out of him, given he's a year older, and it's not a good year older. It's 31 instead of 30.
Yeah, sure. I think that's fair. I mean, he could take a step back a little bit from a production standpoint. You know, he had 35 catches last year. If he has, 25 or 30, it wouldn't necessarily be a bad season. It could still be a good season. I think, part of that kind of depends in a lot of ways. The way that I think about these good and great is how well is the team doing. And so if Tez Walker happens to produce more than we expect, or Bateman makes the leap, and Bateman and Zay are just dominating targets, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And on the flip side of that coin, if he were to be forced into much more playing time, get 75 catches, and Aiken was the guy who
Kamar Aiken,
who had 75 catches or thereabouts. That's not a good thing. And it'd be a terrible thing if he did that at 7.0 yards per target, say.
Correct.
It might not be his fault entirely if it ends up Lamar's hurt and his productivity goes down like that. I would couch it that way. But let's talk about a great season now. What constitutes a great season?
For me, a great season, I just thought, let's keep the similar level of productivity and the passing game as a whole, or efficiency in the passing game as a whole, takes a step where Lamar is throwing for 4,000 plus yards, and all of a sudden Aguilar has, instead of 381 he had last year, he has 450 or 500 yards, but it's not because of injury. It's not because of, all the other guys going down and he's the only one around. It's because rising tide lifts all boats, I guess.
Okay. So if that were to happen, I would offer to you the most likely reason for it to happen is because the defense has a lower tide, is at low tide. And that, of course, is forcing the offense to come from behind more. That the great thing about the Ravens offense is they don't need to generate huge passing statistics to win, because they choke the life out of the other team with the ground game. And if everything's going well, Monken said it the other day when he was talking about Henry getting over 300 carries. He says, I'll tell you what, if he gets over 300 carries, it's because we're having a great year. Yeah. He's right.
Well, an alternative perspective, if the passing game does take that leap, I was listening to the Athletic Football Show podcast where they talked about the AFC North. Was an episode that went up a couple, maybe last week, Robert Mays and Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer. And they said that Lamar Jackson, when he has over 2.5 seconds to throw, he is number one in the league EPA per play as a passer. When he has under 2.5 seconds, he's like 28th. So if the offensive line, if Stanley takes a step up and his health is better this year, and, it's a lot to ask for three new starters. But, if we have a nice offensive line this year, maybe Lamar has time and he is flinging it around.
I don't want to go too deep into this because that deserves a show unto itself, is time to throw. But time to throw is quarterback and scheme related. So, you know, Lamar Jackson, he does best off schedule, and the Ravens like an off schedule offense for him. They have some scheme out quick throws, but basically other teams have a ton more of them. And you look back to the late Manning offense or the current Burrow offense. I mean, they're schemed around quick throws, and of course they're going to be very high passer rating situations because they're almost all complete. You know, they have a very, very high percentage of completions in short areas that you know, can be advanced sometimes. And it doesn't really mean a lot, but the Lamar being number one on extended plays, it is actually very unusual for quarterbacks to do that, because if you're a pocket quarterback, the last thing you want is the time to throw the offensive line is giving you, it's how long it's taking you to find a free target. And your offensive line can't possibly hold up for 3.5 seconds and get you free of, you know, in the way you need to be free. But Lamar Jackson is special, and he can get free and make very good use of that extended time. So, but it is a good thing. It's something we need to do a show on sometime, just to talk through, you know, what are some of the combinations of quarterback. But very little is on the offensive line. I mean, there are offensive lines who just get beat and they can't protect, and there's someone in the quarterback's face early, but that's not really the Ravens' way these last years. The Ravens have been perfectly fine with or without Stanley really being the left tackle we've wanted him to be.
Sure. I rewatched the Detroit game from last year, and if you watch that first half when the Ravens just dominate, Lamar is just standing back there dicing them up, and it's great. I love games like that.
I think he had an unbelievable pressure game that game too, if I remember. That was the one that he was 22 yards per throw under pressure. I think that was the one. I could be wrong. It might be Arizona or something, but I thought it was that game. I thought it was Detroit.
Could be. Hutchinson was going after him, but he just couldn't get there.
All right, let's talk about what a great season is, and where would you play? I mean, you're pegging his year basically at a repeat of 43.
Well, I gave mine. I suggested the rising tide passing game. I mean, it's really hard.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions, and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For me to think of a scenario where he has better production, but the passing offense overall, I mean, I guess he could have better production as the, you know, second or third receiver if someone stands in and the team doesn't suffer because of it. Like, that would be great. You know, if Bateman gets dinged up or Zay misses and he just steps right in there and fills that role, that would be great for us.
I've got something very similar, but I want to talk about what I said in 22 about him. I'll just read verbatim what I had from last year. Supported by extended pocket times. Nope. You can go back to this. This is what I actually said. Finds a new home with the Ravens as a deep threat. Okay, that didn't really occur. And season is more reminiscent of 2020 than all of his other NFL seasons. Rotated in for freshness. We had that for certain. Produces enough that he draws safety attention. That's specific to the one play. Targeted at least 50 times for 8.5 yards per target. He was targeted 45 times for 8.5 yards per target. I think that's met that condition.
That's prescient.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. So anyway, for 23, I said called upon in need due to injuries and produces again at a level similar to 2023. Last year was probably a 75th percentile season from Aguilar, and repeating it qualitatively and quantitatively would probably be an 80th percentile or a little bit higher given the aging curve. So basically I'm saying if he repeated 2023, he'd be for certain a great season. And I think it was a great season last year that he had, even given the fact that he was a year younger.
I agree with that.
All right. Outstanding. Lots of fun to talk Aguilar with you. Let's move on. Talk on the defense, about a guy we probably are going to have less to say about, not because he doesn't have every bit as important a role as Aguilar does, but Trenton Simpson jumps into Patrick Queen's spot at weak side linebacker and is entering year two at age 23. We literally know almost nothing about him since his time at Clemson. He's only played 40, 46, 48, somewhere in there, NFL snaps. I think it's 46, actually, including 20. I think it was 26 in that final game against Pittsburgh where he played very well.
Yeah, you said it. We really don't know the whole lot about him. I mean, on paper, conceptually, he's like a bigger, faster Patrick Queen. And he also has something Queen lacked early in his career, was awareness in the passing game. And Simpson in college played safety at times as well. He was a former safety converted to linebacker. And so, you know, it's again, like on paper, he's a bigger, faster Queen with better chops and pass in the passing game or passing coverage. And so there's a lot to like on paper, but as we've seen time and time again, you never know what you're going to get when these guys start you know, step into these roles. We've seen guys really excel in weak side roles that get thrust into the mic role, Patrick Owosso for one, and they just can't handle it there. So they, you know, they're good in a platoon role. So it'll be, you know, I'm really curious. I'm really excited to see what Simpson can do. I mean, he's one of the guys, that we know nothing about that can really surprise in a positive way.
Yeah. You know, and there aren't too many of those. It's usually your rookie class, a couple of guys who are on the developmental track in their first 4 years, but it's really not very much who can give you a surprise. Really is very rare that you get a positive surprise from a free agent. That's why Aguilar was special. Ronald Darby was really special this year. And Jadeveon Clowney was tremendously special. And Van Noy. I mean, great free agency year for the 23 Ravens.
Yeah, a tremendous amount of value from the 23 free agent class, for sure.
I want to go back to what you said about Simpson in terms of coming into the game as a better pass defender than Queen did. And it may have been something where the Ravens have like learned a lesson in a way in terms of the draft pick. They selected an older player with Simpson, not ancient by any stretch, but he turned 22 in June. And Patrick Queen was still 20, a full year and change younger when he was drafted. He was a full year and change younger in his first season. So, you know, from that standpoint, and Queen had been in the position not very long. It's true in some sense, Simpson has been at the position not very long, but he's coming from a different spot to 5.6 yards per target at Clemson, where his play there certainly indicated that he's able to drop fairly deep and play a fairly effective will linebacker role. I'm getting some boiling water on your side. Do you have that?
All right. I don't hear boiling water. I have got this thing over here off just in case. That's it.
All right. Not sure what it was. Anyway, Harbaugh said he would play special teams last year, and that's pretty much what he did.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually kind of surprised. I was thinking about this in preparation for this pod. I was surprised that Simpson didn't get more time on the field last year. Mm-hmm. Queen and Roquan played every down. By and large, they played every down, which was fantastic from a health standpoint. I was thinking about this. I guess there isn't really a reason to rotate out Queen at any point, given the way that they chose to play last year. I know you're a big fan of platooning at weak side linebacker, and you're a big fan of the dime defense. I think one of the things that Baltimore had with Queen and Roquan playing every down last year is they had the ability to be multiple on defense and not give away their scheme based on personnel, at least at the linebacker position. You can, you know, obviously if you have Hamilton in the slot, you're looking different than if you have Mollett in the slot and Hamilton on the back end. But
I'm taking the other side of that argument because
I'm not saying that you shouldn't do one or the other. I'm saying that you're indicating something different to the offense based on the personnel you're choosing to put on the field. That's what you're going to take. Okay, go ahead.
It's something different. You're showing them something different, but you have even more flexibility in terms of how you can use that player. You still can use a safety at dime linebacker to rush the quarterback, and they did with Anthony Levine. They've done it with plenty of other guys, Benny Thompson and others. You can still drop the coverage, and then you have a better player doing that, which is the big bonus from the thing. You don't have the same weakness against the run because other teams don't generally run the football on third down. If they do, it's usually the quarterback running the ball, and you know, a safety is as well equipped as a linebacker to make that tackle. So I think the dime is far more versatile. I think it's one of the things that platooning gives you. With the others, I've said them so many times, I don't really want to go into them again here, but the other big one being that you mitigate a lot of your injury risk if you have a platoon there.
Yeah. And I think that all makes total sense. I do want to make the point about the 2018 defense that platooned Owosso, Levine, and Kenny Young at weak side linebacker. And I think combined, they played 103% of the snaps. And they would have been all pro first teamer because I think they had like 140 tackles and 11 sacks and, you know, a couple interceptions. Like, and it was fantastic. But Owosso moved to the mic the next year and they had to go out and sign Bynes off the street in order to put a true mic on the field. And so I think one thing that I believe strongly regardless of whether they platoon or not, is that you need the very strong Mike, and we have that in Roquan. So this year, that gives us a lot of flexibility. If Simpson really isn't ready to step into the queen role, he could play, you know, first, second downs, he can platoon, and they'll be fine because of Roquan.
I agree. And what, you know, what you said is the most important thing about Simpson, is that we don't know exactly who he is. And I could envision at least three roles for him this year. And I'll give you the three. He could be a mobile weak side linebacker who is still replaced at dime in 2024. If he somehow doesn't have the coverage shots, things start going wrong, he's not in the right place regularly on third down, they're giving up big plays, or they're giving up first downs regularly because of it, then I think he could be taken off the field and you could move to a dime. I think the Ravens probably have the personnel with somebody, Kane or Braid, being the guy who jumps in at that dime role.
Sure.
That's number one. Number two, he could be a third down weapon. So he's the guy that you can use in all sorts of blitz types off the slot, but maybe he has trouble in the two down role, and maybe they even, you know, split his role up at weak side linebacker, so he's a third down guy. Now, he's unusual in their spec. I would not typically bring in a different weak side linebacker instead of a safety on third down. I'd say if you're gonna go to a lighter guy who has more coverage chops, you just go ahead and put in the safety, because that guy's gonna, your next best coverage safety is always a better cover guy than your second best inside linebacker is a cover guy. You want mostly coverage at that point. So I could see it. But in Simpson's case, he's a rare breed of speed that he could be a useful third down guy that plays more of his snaps then and takes off some early downs for somebody else. I don't think it's going to be Malik Harrison. I don't think he's the guy, but it could be some other guy, Josh Ross or somebody like that, that they like for two downs.
Yeah. I mean, that is you touched on the speed. The curious thing about Simpson is he's probably going to be faster and more explosive than any third safety they are able to sign at this point, or bring in, or any guy that they have on the roster. I mean, he ran a 4.43 with a 40.5-inch vertical. I mean, the guy is explosive walking off the bus. Whether he plays that fast, all we have to go off is the second half against Pittsburgh in the slop. Well, he looked pretty good. He got the sack, made a couple really good plays. So that's one half and one game.
I've had this discussion with Jason Smith, that really enjoyed talking football with him, as everybody else. Huddle It Up Films, if you don't know the place where his material is. I asked him the question directly, is which is more important at this exact point in time? Is it more important the 26 snaps he had against Pittsburgh, or his entire career at Clemson? He says 26 snaps against Pittsburgh. I probably on the other side, but it is a tough call. The most recent evidence is the most pertinent. That's the starting point. Go with recent historical experience when you have a choice between multiple things. You know, if you really want AJ Brown to be, or sorry, let me pick a good one. Dez Bryant to be the Dez Bryant of 10 years ago, you're signing him, you're probably going to be disappointed. So the same goes for players like this. And I think it can be a good thing in Simpson's case. I'm a little concerned about the weather mitigating some of the circumstance there, but I understand the point of view, and recent historical experience is generally, you know, very valuable and worth sticking with. Let me give you a third role though that I think Simpson could fill, and that is that Roquan, nuclear scenario, basically Roquan gets hurt at some point in the season and misses time. The Ravens decide their best option, at least temporarily, is to move Trenton Simpson to they realize they can't move Simpson into a mic role. Okay. So they go to the street and they get the next Josh Bynes. I don't think it'll be Josh Bynes this time, by the way, but who knows? Yeah. You know, I can't ever rule it out. But it'll be some guy who legitimately can move Thump, knows where the ball is going, reads the play well, doesn't necessarily have outstanding speed, and helps them control the run game against some divisional opponents in Pittsburgh in particular, I'm thinking of. But that he could then be a guy who plays what was a Chris Board role, where he moves over to play Mike on third down. And Simpson stays on the field, plays Mike on third down where he might not otherwise, and the Ravens still bring in a dime on the weak side. I would be very much in favor of that. I might even be okay if they just brought the dime in to play the Mike role, just to not confuse Simpson's responsibilities or to, you know, trying to have him learn too much or whatever. But I could certainly see under those circumstances that he might end up being the defensive signal caller if he's going to be on the field on all the downs. Could be Hamilton, but it could be him.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I mean, you referenced the when they had Board play the mic move over. I hated it that year that they did that. Yeah. I just didn't think that was the right move. But I'm just a guy on the couch. But
he wasn't the right guy for it. But much like Owosso.
Yeah, the thing that we really like, we know that I'm really curious how he is going to adapt to the mental side of the game when he's out there playing. For Queen, it took him a long time. Like, he came along really slowly. And the Ravens were really patient with him. And, you know, I was rewatching some of his highlights last year, and he played great. He played great, and we're going to miss him. But, you know, I'm really excited for what Simpson can do, and, you know, really curious. I remember anecdotally after the Pittsburgh game, when they were asking Queen about Simpson's play, and I recall he made the comment that Simpson is always, you know, always doing the mental reps and like asking the right questions and always like, you know, always prepared. And so that gives me a lot of hope that he's coming into this with the right frame of mind and he's going to excel. And so I'm really excited, but you know, you want to be cautious. You're on mute, Ken.
If you had to pick the most important single developmental need for Simpson going into 2024, it's actually kind of tough because I think there's two big ones, but what would you say it is?
Okay, so I'm just thinking, like, playing next to Roquan, he just needs to be able to react and play what he sees based on his responsibility. I don't know if that's a single thing or what you call that, but in my mind, that's what it is.
Okay, read and react. That's a reasonable thing. I'll give you the two, and I'm not sure which is more important, but the ability to shed blocks is something we haven't seen yet from Simpson. We don't know one way or another. There's not enough data, and you would never get it in 46 snaps to know if he was really a decent block shedder. But that's something that's right up there. The other is making sure that he understands and is facile with his zone responsibilities and the ability to drop and make sure covered. The Ravens don't get really exposed between level 2 and 3 the way they have been at times in the past with recent sets of linebackers that haven't worked out. So anyway, I think those two things are actually very close to each other in terms of importance. Not even sure which one the Ravens need more. They definitely do have, you know, with both the Browns and the Steelers in division, they have a real need to be able to stop the run this year. And I don't know if they'll make the same kind of choice that they did last year under McDonald to be a little weaker against the run and derive all the value that they did against the pass.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the elephant in the room that we haven't talked about in this pod, and you're probably going to touch on it on every defensive player you do, is what does the defense look like under Zach Orr?
Right.
What does he retain from the McDonald era? What does he change? And then how does he call the games? You know, those three things are I think I heard recently on one of the Ravens podcasts that Orr was really critical in the game planning as part of McDonald's staff and building the defensive game plans. And so you would think that it's probably going to have a very similar look and feel. McDonald was exceptional calling in game, but.
Yeah. Adapting in game. He certainly was critical in or critical of. It was critical in, right? That preposition is critical.
Oh, sorry. He was critical in, like he was in a critical component to developing the game plan. Yeah. Good choice.
All right. Very good. Yes. Okay. So, well, let's go on to the meat and potatoes of this, which is what constitutes a good season for Trenton Simpson this year. So how's he going to, I use, by the way, the 60th and 80th percentile are what I use for a good and a great season. But what's a good season for you?
For me, I just said he plays serviceably in a platoon scenario. So whether he's an early down thumper that's, you know, primarily playing the run or, you know, potentially coming in on third downs, that he gets on the field and he contributes. And then I wrote that the Ravens defense stays strong up the middle. You know, to me, that would be good. Like, I don't know if he's playing 30% of the snaps or 70% in that scenario. But either way, if he can stay on the field and contribute and they retain their defensive, you know, tenacity in the middle, like that's to me is a good season for him.
I hate being beaten to the punch by whoever the guest is, but it happens all the time on the show. And whenever this happens, I just have to read my thing verbatim and say I've got something very similar. So good season means finds a valuable platoon role where he excels either on passing on early or early downs, becomes another plus player in the Ravens defense. Not picky about what he's good at. So I'm right there with you, and I don't really care if he plays 50, 30%, 50%, 70% of the snaps. Any of those would be a good season. And particularly if he's a plus player at what he does.
Right. Yeah.
Take us on to a great season here.
So a great season, I put, you know, backfills Queen admirably. He's able to stay on the field in most downs. I mean, this might be a great, great season. So even, you know, honestly, like thinking about what we said for a good season, if he plays effectively 70% of the snaps on defense and comes off in some critical downs, that's a great season for him. That's really phenomenal, I think. You know, like when he's the primary guy that gets subbed out, that I think that's great.
I'm not sure that guarantees it. If he plays 70% of the snaps, I don't think it's necessarily even a good season. And the case in point is Patrick Queen. Patrick Queen's rookie year was not a great season. It was not a good season. It was a bad season.
Good point. I guess he could play if not play well, and they could just leave him out there. I'm just presuming that if he's not playing well, they're going to make a change. That was given. Okay.
They are in a better spot to do that right now. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Was that all you had for a great season?
No, that's fine. I mean, again, like if he backfills Queen admirably, year four Queen. Not the early phase Queen. Then he stays on field the most downs and he provides that strong, that playmaking presence at the weak side. That would be a great, great season for him.
Okay. I'm very similar. I'm a little different, but I'll just read it to you. Game translates to the NFL level and he gets an opportunity by injury, pass rush impact, or coverage talent to win a three down role. Brings at least one wow factor to the field. That is his first calling card, whether that is speed to the point of attack, delayed pass rush, coverage, nose for the football, or an ability to shed/avoid blocks. Could be anything. And I'm not picky about what he's good at because I don't have any idea what he's going to be good at. That's the honest truth of this. I have no idea how his game is going to translate to the NFL level. We got a little taste of three flash plays against Pittsburgh, which were basically what we're talking about within those 26 snaps he played. That was terrific, but I we need to see more, and I'm not picky about how the flash comes. I just want to see lots of it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. One question for you related to something you said earlier and as it pertains to Simpson's role. You said that you felt Baltimore does have suitable dime talent on the roster now. Who do you really think could slot into that role? Because I think the third safety is still very uncertain.
Right.
Much less fourth or fifth safety.
The back end safety, they haven't signed that guy yet because Braid or Kane, neither one of those guys is him. Kane specifically, he's a special teams player or he's a dime safety or he's not playing at all. I don't even want him active on game day if those aren't the two roles basically that the Ravens have in mind for him. He's definitely not a back end guy. There were other guys. There was the one guy that I was highly critical of that everybody else loved at safety this year who gave up over 13 yards per target. And had five interceptions. I'm trying to
on
remember
on our roster.
Not on the Ravens roster. But
he's in the draft. Not Jamal Adams. Oh, in the draft. I see.
But anyway, I've forgotten his name for this moment. But anyway, the Ravens haven't signed that guy, and it might be a little bit difficult to find him, or at least people might think it'd be a little difficult to find him. I'll just say Jamal Adams is not that guy either. Adams would be another guy who would come in and play dime for the Ravens. And one of the reasons why you know, Jamal Adams has to come cheap is that his role is limited. I mean, you can't play him in just a traditional. You're basically saying you're only playing single high if you have Jamal Adams on the field, because he's an extra guy in the line of scrimmage. Now, is that bad if you're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers? It might not be. Is it bad if you're playing, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals? Yeah, it probably is. It, one of the things you want to do is show a too high look to Burrow, who doesn't have that elite arm strength to fit the ball in. I think it's a very important position. And I think Daryl Worley is still on speed dial right now, because I think he could fit that role, but I think he's kind of, we know by now he's probably not the Ravens' first choice. So they're basically saying, hey, Daryl, we love you. We want you back. We had 18 transactions for you in 22. You know, you were our first move to get you on the back end when Marcus Williams had problems. And you played great, didn't miss a tackle last year, you know, adapted to the safety role like a glove from that first preseason game where he dominated it. There's so much about that, about how he played to love, and yet he's not re-signed.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird situation. Jeremy Lucien is gone. He has not yet, by the way, Jeremy Lucien has not signed with anybody. He's been around for a bunch of tryouts, is my understanding.
Wasn't he signed to a futures deal? And that's why I thought he was signed. And that's
the
why
Ravens, the Ravens known. Never signed him to a futures deal.
No, not in Baltimore. I thought someone else signed him.
Did it happen today?
No, this was a couple months ago, so I must be wrong.
No, it didn't happen. No, he's been to tryouts around, and you know, he's a guy who supposedly knows the defense well, and you know, probably has the split field speed, but not the, and instincts, but not the, anyway, he's the most Stone-esque player they might have had, and it would have been another really smart guy on the defense. It would have been, but anyway, it doesn't have to be Jeremy Lucien. It has to be somebody who can actually play split field. And there are actually a fair number of veterans who can do it with a combination of instincts and some retained speed. In order for the Ravens to play all the coverage games they did, it has to be a guy who's really comfortable playing zone defense and really understands those precepts at a high level. Most strong safeties don't have that. So the guy we're looking for is probably an ex-free safety who's fallen out of favor, and the Ravens like him somehow.
Yeah, or I know Justin Simmons is out there.
He's not the guy.
You don't think so?
Not for a split field role. I don't believe it. I love him at dime, you know, and there's some reasons to believe, you know, he's maybe a slot guy who could come and do that. I mean, the Ravens now have an excess of slot talent with their draft, including Humphrey.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would imagine that they're at this point, like, given the success they had in bringing Clowney and Van Noy in late, they know that they can go get Worley if they need him in a bind. Yeah. Let's let training camp play out. We'll try to bring a veteran in for the cheap that we really think can play there. And then, you know, if not, then make the call, I guess.
All right. Great talking football with you as always, Brad. Tell folks where they can reach you online and have these kind of discussions.
Sure. I'm at MC Bradley on Twitter/X. And I'm always up for chatting Ravens. This is the fun time to speculate and, you know, pontificate about what the season could hold.
Yeah, I love this series. It's a very always an engaging conversation every night for basically a full month for me. These shows will be going on for about 6 weeks. There are 29 of them scheduled. So we're really going to go. It's a deep dive on the whole Ravens roster, and you'll hear some, you know, certainly some overlapping information from show to show, but hopefully you're getting a different person's take on the other side of this, at least every night. And I really appreciate what you brought to this show, Brad. Other folks out there, Ken, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. I've still got the Recollection series going on. I'd love to have some more people talk about some of their favorite Ravens of the past. Whatever your connection to that player is, personal or a moment that you really remember as a fan, or a ball game that really stood out to you in some particular way, or have two or three, you know, plays that you love from his career. Like someday, 10 years from now, we're going to be talking about Aguilar and recollecting this Rams touchdown where he dragged the safety off so Zay Flowers could get free. And I mean, it seriously, it's going to be one of the
one of the plays we love to talk about. So if you've got that kind of a player from the Ravens past, not looking for the Mount Rushmore, so really no Ring of Honor players. I'm looking for anybody beneath that level. And you'd like to talk about him for 30 minutes or 20 minutes. That'd be great. I'd love to have that discussion with you. Just hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter, and just reserve your player. So no one else gets him. Brad, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.